If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio!
Welcome to Witch Police Radio. I'm here with a guest who is new to the show and relatively new to me as well. I try to follow as many local artists as I can on social media, regardless of genre. Whenever I see a new one, I start following. And I have so many on that I've followed and haven't followed up on actually listening to. So when the guest on this episode reached out to me, I'd heard the name, I was following the social media, but I hadn't really done kind of a deep dive into the actual music. And I'm glad that we connected because, what you're doing is really cool. It's different. It's pretty unique. And so I think the best way to start this off is if you want to just introduce yourself, give a bit of background about what it is that you do, and we'll take it from there.
My name is Chris Sams. I make music under the name C Sams. The C stands for Chris. I make synth pop music. And if you've followed me on Instagram before, you might see I also sometimes dabble in ambient and that kind of thing, anything synthesizer related basically, but definitely along the lines of synth pop, Depeche Mode, New Order, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason we're here today is to talk about this new record you have coming out, but I want to just go back a little bit first. How long have you been doing this? Like, when did you start sort of experimenting with synthesizers?
I guess I started experimenting with synthesizers in the early 2000s. I was in a band called Tiger Beat. That was first time I ever bought or tried a synthesizer. I think you know Mitch was in Tiger Beat as well. That's when it started, and then I would just buy synthesizers with really cool presets, and then I realized eventually you could make your own sounds, and it wasn't really about the presets for the most part. It was probably around 2008 that I started messing with synthesizers, and it's become my main instrument. Before that I was playing bass guitar, maybe a little bit of drums here and there, but synthesizers really kind of took over everything I did.
They seem to do that, actually. I've had a lot of people on who do music with synths, and it definitely seems like one of those things that it becomes starts as a hobby and then becomes sort of an obsession, and people start getting more and more gear and figuring out how to do more and more things. Are you one of those guys who just like you have sort of grown your collection of equipment and tools to make this music?
Yeah, there have been a few things that have made their ways in and out of my setup. I feel like I've gotten to a good point now where I've sort of plateaued. I mean, I kind of always say that though, and end up buying some new thing and selling some old thing, and I have probably about five or so synths in my setup, and as far as drum machines go, I kind of rely on a sampler to kind of take classic 808, 909 Linn drum samples, and kind of it's a Volca sample, and it has its own character that it brings to the samples that I really like. And so that's kind of where the setup's at now. But there have been many come through.
It seems to happen. I think everyone I've met who is into it, that seems to be a common trait. But what you just said about sort of the character of the equipment, of the samplers, of the sounds, that's something I'm always interested in with more electronic music, is just the idea of having character and feeling and emotion sort of associated with very, very sounds that you would assume on the surface are sterile, and digital and or analog, depending what you're using. But you know what I mean? It's like this kind of the machine sounds versus kind of organically played sounds. And I think there is definitely a way to generate as much emotion and feeling out of a synth as you could on a guitar or a saxophone or whatever. But how do you feel about that? Like, how do you sort of get feeling out of what you're playing? Because I think in listening to your stuff, that is definitely part of it. Like, there's definitely sort of an emotional sort of path a lot of the songs take.
Yeah, I think, well, for me, this whole synth pop genre, synthesizers in general, it's such a nostalgic thing for me. It's the sound that I grew up with.
Yeah.
Whether it was a band on the radio or the soundtrack to some, you know, interstitial commercial, whatever, coming up next.
Yeah.
Special kind of sound. There was sort of that that nostalgia and a sort of warmth to it, because even if it was a digital synthesizer, it usually made its way through some analog or some other medium before it made its way to my ears.
Sure.
So I think that's kind of the trick, is to make sure even if you're using a digital synth emulation, just like in your computer, having it go through some medium or some kind of morphing mechanism to give it that little bit of life and little bit of variance to break up that sort of cold signal. I think that's kind of the key and something I try to make sure I put in my music as well.
Do you think that's a conscious thing that listeners pick up on? I mean, obviously for you, doing it is a conscious thing, but do you think people can hear that? I mean, is there like an audible sort of, I don't know if there's an answer to this, maybe not, but like, you know what I mean? Is there something that sort of is a tell maybe that kind of sound has gone through sort of those extra steps to analogify itself, I guess?
Yeah, I think you can really, it's like cooking. You can really over-season something.
Sure.
So maybe you have like a tape emulation or something that you're feeding things through, and you know, it's really tempting to crank it up so you really feel it and really hear it. But I think we can hear and feel that warmth on much more subtle subconscious level. There's sort of like a, it's not like you hear the digital sound and you think, oh, this is too digital. There's almost like an ear fatigue to the digital. I find that super digital sound, where it's like too perfect, or you know, maybe that sound wave is repeating too perfectly too many times. So basically what that warm analog feel does, it kind of varies it a bit, so it does feel a little more natural and like a sound that you can listen to for longer periods of time. But having listened to a lot of A/B tests, like the new digital version of like a Juno, like some old analog synthesizer, it is almost impossible these days to hear the difference between the digital and the analog.
Right. Well, and then, I mean, there's an extra level to that, I guess, because you're releasing this stuff on vinyl too, right? Like, and cassette, your upcoming album, and your previous one was an LP as well, right? So, I mean, does that contribute to it at all? I mean, I love tapes personally, but I mean, I know tapes are kind of have a reputation for being a lot more lo-fi and, you know, not necessarily having the same sound quality as a you know, high-res digital file or something. Does that kind of add to the sort of feel of it, as dropping it down to sort of cassette level?
Absolutely, yeah. And there's all sorts of warbles and, you know, a lot of, I mean, I think warmth can be as simple as a low pass filter, or basically cutting the high frequencies of anything.
Right.
Suddenly it sounds warm and nostalgic. And tapes definitely do that. And I almost didn't do tapes for this release, but I definitely did. Like, I did a run of 10 demo tapes to send out to some record labels.
Okay.
And yeah, my friend was, I was over at a friend's place and he put my album on for me while we were eating in Pomelo. Shout out to Sid. I loved the way it sounded. It's my favorite way. It's my favorite way to listen to the album for sure.
Cool.
So.
Cool.
We'll be right back.
Well, that's interesting too, because of the kind of nostalgic throwback sort of vibe to it as well, right? I mean, you're definitely obviously making references to influences from the 80s. And I mean, tape, you know, that was sort of the format, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And actually, me knowing anything about synth pop or synthesizers or anything like that, I felt like I was always kind of chasing that sound, and I'd hear something on the radio, or I knew, like, you know, the sort of cheesy 80s pop hits like I don't know, like Culture Club, or I'll even throw in Blue Monday by New Order.
Sure.
Even though they ended up being one of my favorite bands. It wasn't until I bought a Depeche Mode tape. I worked at a thrift store, and I had access to lots of tapes, and I was like, I'll try this Depeche Mode tape. I've heard people talk about Depeche Mode, and I put that tape on. I sat in my room and started playing an old Nintendo, and it was just so nostalgic. And
yeah.
It's hearing that tape, it was like the best of Depeche Mode or something like that. I was like, oh, these are the sounds I've been trying to find and like have more in my life. And yeah, it was chasing that down on tape that kind of brought me to where I am now.
Well, how do you get then from, I guess, from the point of hearing that and realizing, like, you know, light bulb going off, this is the sounds you want to create, to then figuring out how to actually make those sounds? Because I find that, I mean, even though I've had explained to me, you know, in depth plenty of times, the idea of synthesizers, it's very daunting to me as someone who sees people doing it well, and just there seems to be like this whole kind of like almost magic to it, to plugging things into a wall and turning knobs, and like, how do you get from, oh, I want to do this, to then suddenly like you're actually in the process of making those kind of sounds?
Yeah, I guess you kind of fumble through it. The way I did it was I was still in the phase of buying synthesizers that had presets that are, sure, like, okay, I'm pretty sure there's almost like that sort of soft horn sound. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I think so,
like,
yeah.
Wow. Almost like if you think of Africa by Toto, that kind of sound. It was the MicroKorg XL Plus or something that had various dubstep settings that I didn't really need at the time. But it had that really great nostalgic, like, wow kind of sound, classic synthesizer sound to me at that time. And I just started there. And then, you know, you just start playing with the knobs, you get a little more brave, and you're like, okay, what does this do?
Yeah.
You know, I'll turn the synth off and turn it back on and nothing will be broken. And so, you know, I'm just going to turn this and, what was that? That was resonance. What does that mean? What does that do? And then the more you look into other synthesizers, you know, what's the best starter synthesizer? I can't say enough good things about the Roland SH-101, or they reissued it as the 01A, and just the layout of that synthesizer was so intuitive in learning what the workflow is to create a sound on a synthesizer.
Okay. Yeah. And so this new record you have coming out, it's coming out, I guess, next month from when we're recording this, but this is your first release in a while, right? I mean, I know you've had the singles kind of leading up to this, but this is your first full length in how many years now?
Five and a half, I think. Yeah. I think the first album was October 2018.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wanted to release this one October-ish of 2023, but I didn't quite get the records in time. So I thought, let's wait until the spring. Kind of fits the theme of the record anyway.
How long ago did you have this sort of finished? I mean, did the pandemic play into this at all, or with the timing on the release, or is that 5-year period, is that just kind of your process of making new material?
Yeah, it kind of was the process of making new material. I only ever, when I made that first album and put it out on vinyl, that was kind of like, oh, okay, I did that thing. I don't have to do it anymore.
But you check it off the list, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll just continue to jam and post random things to Instagram. But I did this monthly challenge, I think, 3 different times. It's called Jamuary. It's for any kind of songwriter, but there are a lot of synthesists that participate. And you basically write a song for every day for the month of January.
Cool.
I've kind of accumulated all these started songs, and I started to, I was just listening to these 1 minute clips of them, and I thought, oh, that song could be longer, or
right.
And then I just started to like pile them together. I was like, okay, I could probably make another album. I did start recording this album in the pandemic. But I did finish it. It was finished, November 2023.
Okay. So it's fairly recent when you had it actually like ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And it's so hard to sit on a project once it's finished, cause you've been working so hard and all you want is to put out in the world. So even just waiting these 4 or so months, it's been tough. So
yeah, I'm excited. Yeah. What's the response been to the singles so far? Because I know you have two of them at the time of recording this that are out.
Yeah, the response has been great. I've been kind of promoting the music more than I have in the past. I'm generally kind of like a, I'm my worst salesman and don't like talking about what I'm doing. It's been great putting these singles out and actually sending them out to some media channels and stuff like that. And the response has been great so cool. far. We just played a show not that long ago, a few weeks ago at this point. It was mostly the new songs, and the response was great. People were dancing and seemed to be enjoying themselves. So that was great to see for the first time, some reaction to some of the new stuff.
Well, I guess that validates the time that you've spent working on this too, right? Is it seeing the in-person immediate reaction to it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it actually is, this album I worked harder on probably more than any other music project, partly just in songwriting itself, but also this was definitely a pandemic thing, but I wanted to learn how to mix.
Okay.
Because on the last project, I thought, I really wanted to get in there. I felt like there was still some creative decisions to be made. That's kind of like a hot topic. I guess mixing is maybe supposed to be technical, but I think there's a lot of opportunity to put in a lot of that sort of that feeling or a certain flavor to the sound overall. So yeah, that was a big part of the labor of love for this one as well.
Well, I can see that being part of the creative process too. If it's your project, right? You're making the music, you're writing the songs. It makes sense that would be an element of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it felt good to do. It was a lot of work. It was a big learning curve, but there was a lot of demystifying to do. But once I realized it's essentially all volume, even when you get into the frequencies and all that kind of thing, is just how high certain things are in the mix.
Yeah, that's cool. So you mentioned a few minutes ago the you played this stuff live. How does this work live? Because I mean, in listening to it and with synths, it often seems like it's something that can be done with someone pressing a few buttons and then sort of sitting back. I realize that the creation of it is not that, but there's definitely sort of this idea that, oh, it's just electronic. You don't have to do anything. What does it look like? And how similar, I guess, is the sound of the live show to what's on the record?
That's a really good question. The answer, depending on what year, the answer would have changed. I've done this project as a solo act with mostly backing track, and the vocals are live, obviously, but maybe I would pick one synthesizer or two synthesizers and remove those parts from the recording and have that be the case. That's not super dissimilar to how it is now. My partner Danielle is up on stage with me now. She's also featured on the record on vocals on a couple songs. So it just kind of made sense for her to join me on stage. We played a few shows last summer as a duo, but now my friend Steven, who is sort of my synthesis enthusiast friend, we kind of figured out synthesizers together. He's joined us on stage now too. So it is now a three-piece. Drums are in the backing track still. I haven't quite made the leap to bringing everything on stage and having the sequencer there and having it all fully live. That would maybe be the dream final scenario of the live experience. With the backing track and having the drums and some of the arpeggiated parts or the sequence parts, along with the live main parts going on, I think it sounds pretty close to the record. There is a bit more of a human element to it, I would say. So it makes it easier to play live, but also I think adds a nice spin on it.
Yeah. Are you sort of aiming to play it as similar as possible to the record, or is there room sort of to change it and maybe show by show, even just based on having that human element involved?
Yeah, I mean, the goal now right now is to play it as closely to the record as possible. But even as I say that, I'm realizing some of the songs from the previous albums have changed. Danielle is singing backups on some of the songs where there weren't human backups before. There was maybe vocoder backups,
right?
Some things are changing here and there. some of the intros are a little bit different, but I would say the goal, I guess, is to try and do the album as much justice as possible.
We'll be right back.
And so this, you know, the good thing about this being a podcast is someone could hear it the day it comes out, in which case your album is imminent, the release is imminent, or they could hear it, you know, a year from now or whatever. What's the best way to find your music online? I mean, I know you have the two releases now, where would you send someone? Do you have a preference where someone would, first of all, listen, and then secondly, just, you know, to buy a physical product because you have the vinyl and the cassette?
Yeah, I would say for buying the physical product, definitely Bandcamp. It's csams.bandcamp.com. It's also a great place to listen to the album.
That's where I listened, I listened to the singles at least, yeah.
Yeah. I would say I like to mention sort of like the free, completely accessible ones. I'll be posting it to SoundCloud through the distribution thing that I use. It all goes to YouTube track by track as well. Okay. At some point. Those are the best ways, but it'll be available on everything, Spotify, iTunes, you name it. It should be there.
Right on. And what's the actual release date? I mean, for people who are listening ahead of the release date?
Yeah. So the album comes out on Friday, May 3rd. And the album release show is the following day, May 4th, on a Saturday at the Handsome Daughter.
Right on. Who else is playing at that show? Do you have a opening act?
We got French Class and DJ Joel F. is going to DJ between sets.
Cool. And then, as far as finding out about future shows or future releases and that kind of thing, what's the best way to sort of follow what you're up to, whether it's on social media or elsewhere?
Yeah, I think it'll probably be Instagram. It's the only thing keeping me on the platform, but is also the easiest thing for me in terms of keeping people up to date with what I'm doing.
Right on. Cool.